dear friends, it's actually particularly nice to be asked to speak at an event when so many of those present genuinely are friends, some of them old friends. And I'm a great admirer of Fiona's work and the work she's done with others in Rialto. And Rialto Youth Project is very dear to my heart, so I have no hesitation about saying no, saying yes. Sorry, I usually have no hesitation about saying no. Saying yes when I was asked to come here today. I would have great time for Rialto anyway, because of the quality of the work that goes on there. But the project has a particularly dear place in my heart because it was established almost at exactly the same time that I first took up a job with what's now called the City of Dublin Youth Service Board, Cóir na Leas Óige, back in the early 1980s. And Jim has been there from the start, and I've been around ever since, involved in youth work in one way or another. As I say, for that reason, it's a place that I hold very dearly in my heart, but also hold in great esteem. And in that regard, it's no accident that it has been one of the prized placement opportunities for our students in Maynooth on the youth and community work programmes over the years. When you say to people, you know, you can negotiate with us where you go on placement, Rialto is usually pretty close to the top of people's lists. Everybody wants to go there because of the quality of the work and the quality of the supervision. I thought for the little bit of time I have today, it would be useful to focus not so much on practice in youth work, but on policy, because we're going to be hearing a lot about practice anyway. And it's a timely opportunity to look at some policy considerations, since we can, since it's possible to look back 30 years to where I've been talking about already in the early 80s, when in 1984 a report was published, the final report of the National Youth Policy Committee, which is often called the Costello Report because it was chaired by Declan Costello, a very eminent public figure. He was a former TD, former Attorney General. He became a High Court judge and very well known. The committee was appointed in 83 and reported in 1984. So this is its 30th anniversary. And that can be seen as one bookend of a period of change in Irish youth policy and youth work policy in particular. All the more so because, rather neatly, just this year, we've had the publication of another important policy document, the National Policy Framework for Children and Young People, called Better Outcomes, Brighter Futures. And so I thought it might be useful just to have a look back to 84, and then to more recently when the National Policy Framework was published in the spring, and just consider what has changed and what hasn't changed in relation to the policy discourse about youth policy specifically, but even within that, more specifically, youth work. And then I go on to say a little bit about where the arts and creativity fit in at a policy level. The Costello Report, or the National Youth Policy Report, is sometimes cited by contemporary youth workers and academics and educators in youth work as the high point when a very progressive vision of youth work was expressed, after which we've gone downhill and never managed to recapture that progressive impulse. And I just wanted to say here today, because I was involved in the work of that committee and I was actually researcher for it, that that's true, but only up to a point. It's important to acknowledge that there were some very progressive things in the report, but there were some less progressive things as well. One of the most progressive parts of it was a statement that youth work must essentially be concerned with social change. So this little bit here goes that youth work must be addressed to the developmental needs of the individual, must enable the individual to be actively involved in society, but further than that, must also be concerned with social change. Youth work must have a key role in enabling young people to analyse society and in motivating and helping them to develop the skills and capacities to become involved in effecting change. And sometimes people today look back at that and say, oh, if only somebody would say that again. You know, if only the Youth Work Act would say that. Because the Youth Work Act is rather, as acts tend to be, instrumental and legalistic in the formulation that it presents. Youth work is a planned program of education designed for the purpose of aiding and enhancing the personal and social development of young persons through their voluntary involvement and so on. But in fact, I believe that that act and that definition, which was first stated in 2001 and then has been re-enshrined in the most recent legislation, 2013 Education and Training Boards Act, that actually it's all that you can expect of a piece of legislation. It's not bad to have a legal definition of youth work. And this particular one, I think, neither prescribes nor proscribes too much. I don't think that there's much that any of the people here involved in youth work would want to do that that definition would not allow them to do. I think it's more important to look at the broader policy context and say what kinds of ideas are there around about young people, and in particular about equality and inequality and young people. Because as John mentioned right at the outset, the egalitarian impulse and the egalitarian project is central to everything you've been trying to do in Rialto over the years, and it's also central to my reason for being involved in youth work. And so if you look back at the Costello report and then forward to more recent times, in fact there has been some significant progress. While there was that very positive statement of aspiring to social change in the Costello report, it barely acknowledged the existence of social inequality. Or at least if it did, it couched it in highly individualistic terms, highly familized terms, and completely ignored structural inequalities. So this little excerpt, which I won't read through, illustrates that very clearly. It spoke throughout in terms of the disadvantaged. And disadvantage here, disadvantage is a wonderful idea because you can't convert it into a verb that somebody does to somebody else. So it manages to avoid the fact that anybody's responsible for any of these awful things that are happening to the disadvantaged. The disadvantaged. And it's located within the family. And the examples that are given here make that clear. Much of the inability to take advantage of opportunities and services, according to this definition, stems from home circumstances. So the entire problem is located in the home. A young person in this situation tends to mirror the experience of personal insecurity and low achievement, thus perpetuating the cycle of disadvantage. And then finally, in the final extract, again, disadvantage is something that can arise at any time in family life, and a response, therefore, must take account of the home and family environment while promoting the young person's development. Now, this will enable him or her, him, in the words of this report, to advance at a rate similar to that of their more fortunate peers. So it's all a matter of luck, actually. So we have come some way from that view. And if we look at a recent document, the National Youth Work Development Plan, a section of the vision of youth work included in that plan is explicitly entitled Equality and Inclusiveness. And it states that we have a vision of youth work which values diversity, aims to eradicate injustice and inequality, and strives for openness and inclusiveness in all its dealings with young people and adults. That didn't just happen because policymakers changed their minds. That change took place because practitioners on the ground forced policymakers to change, at least to change the way they talk about things in the intervening years. They may not necessarily think differently all the time, but they talk differently to how they used to talk. And that is some progress, I think, because it means that frameworks get put into place that enable things to happen that might not happen otherwise. And one of the key things that had led to this statement of equality and inclusiveness was the equality legislation. And in fact, that section of the National Youth Work Development Plan explicitly refers to the Equal Status Act and says that this act should be upheld in spirit as well as in letter in a youth work context. What that means really is that the equality agenda within the youth work policy context is as good as, but no better than, really, the equality legislation. And we'll hear more about that, no doubt, from Kathleen shortly. But as you will well know, the equality legislation has significant failings. There are types of equality that are not acknowledged in it at all. But there's more in it than was acknowledged back in the 80s when I first started working in this area. And building on that, since then, the National Quality Standards Framework has included equality as one of the key principles that projects and workers are expected to demonstrate in their practice when they're availing of funding and support for youth work. Again, a sign of some progress. However, it's significant that when the National Quality Standards Framework moved from being only applied to projects led by paid staff to the second phase, which was where it applied to volunteer-led projects and groups, youth clubs, scout troops, local arts projects for young people and so on, that were run by volunteers. Not all five of these principles are expected to be upheld. And the two that are not expected to be demonstrated in practice by volunteer-led youth work are the equality one and the continuous improvement of quality one, which is a clear failing in current policy and makes an utter mess of the very idea that equality is worth striving for in the first place. It totally undermines the principle. If it only matters when the worker in question is being paid. And most recently then, Better Outcomes, Brighter Futures, also which is the current national policy framework, also sets out five key principles, one of which is equality. Again, it links its statement of equality to the equality legislation, specifically the Equal Status Act, so it's as good as, but no better than, that legislation. Therefore, better than things used to be, but not as good as things should be by any means. And across the five outcomes within that framework, there are passing references to equality as well. So what about the arts and creativity and culture then? If we look back to the Kostler report, there's a section called cultural education, and its content is couched in extraordinarily narrow terms. Cultural education for that committee essentially meant cultivating an Irish consciousness. In order to distinguish the Irish from other European and American cultures, we believe that the aim of the National Youth Policy should be to create an environment which will encourage the development of distinctive Irish features and ensure all of young people are given access to these features. Thankfully, we've moved beyond that too. And of course, the increasing multiculturalism of Ireland in the meantime now does make that literally laughable. But also, because of the insistence over the years of certain practitioners and certain educators, including Realto Youth Project and certain artists, that is simply no longer acceptable in a youth work context. Better outcomes, brighter futures doesn't say much at all. The current policy doesn't say much at all about the arts or creativity. I actually did a quick search on it, and the word creativity, I think, appears 3 times in the entire document without any elaboration. The word arts appears a few times, but in the context of the same type of statement, that children and young people will be, the outcome will be that they will be enjoying play, recreation, sport, arts, culture, and nature. So part of an ill-defined package, and the commitment of the government is simply to enable greater access. So at that level of, the broadest level of policy for young people, things remain extraordinarily vague. And yet, in the meantime, an awful lot has happened, to begin to conclude. All because of the efforts of specific individuals with a mission and with a commitment, and that word was used earlier. Largely because of the efforts of individuals within the arts sector and within youth work, there's a national youth arts program was established in the late 1990s involving the Arts Council, the National Youth Council of Ireland, and what's now the Department of Children and Youth Affairs. Its status has changed in the meantime, but there is still a youth arts program in the National Youth Council of Ireland. Among other things, it established the Certificate in Youth Arts with us in Maynooth. The Arts Council itself continues to have a focus on young people, children and young people. It's currently the Children, Young People and Education programme. And at local level, there have been numerous valuable partnerships and collaborations. And in that regard, I think it would be hard to identify a better example nationally than Rialto itself. Because all the way back, almost to the point at which it was established, arts has had a place in the practice of Rialto Youth Project. And that is thanks, of course, to the vision and imagination and commitment of those who have been involved. Jim himself, right from the very start. Gráinne, whom I see here now, Gráinne Lord, who brought to Rialto an artistic, not just an artistic sensibility, but skill to go with it, to add to the programmes that were being offered. And then over the years, they in Rialto have worked with a variety of artists and people committed to the arts. People in wet paint, Neil O'Bweel, I don't know if Neil's here today, but he has played an extraordinary role in raising an awareness of issues to do with the arts. So Rialto is really a jewel in the crown, I think, when we talk about the arts and youth work in Ireland. And one of the people, of course, in particular, that has worked so extraordinarily creatively and productively with them is Fiona herself. And her work, I think, I haven't read the book yet. I did manage to get a look at the introduction, and that certainly makes me want to read it very much. It seems to me that what Fiona has really managed to capitalise on, to use that word, in the context of Rialto Youth Project, is an acknowledgement and an engagement. And I think the word engagement itself has already come up in earlier contributions, and it's apt here. An engagement with certain dimensions of youth work and of youth work's relationship with arts that don't often enough get acknowledged. And they are time and relationship or relationships and collectivity and power. And I won't elaborate on those because I don't need to here, and they will all come up in one way or another in the discussions that follow. But in my own research among youth work projects over the years, specifically one in the last few years in which Rialto itself was involved, time emerged as an absolutely crucial dimension of the change, the positive change that happens in youth work. And it's not one that is sufficiently taken into account by policymakers or funders who consistently place an emphasis on evidence and outcomes in the shorter term. Relationships and collectivity, absolutely at the heart of youth work. Not just individual interpersonal relationships, but group relationships. There's nothing else that is quite like what happens in a youth work context. And when arts is integrated with that, the potential is truly endless. And power, without which nothing happens, good or bad, but a word that is hardly ever uttered in a youth work context, and certainly not in a policy context. And yet, for years, it has been part of the consciousness of what happens in Rialto, in the youth work, in the arts work, and it is right up there, foregrounded in the work that Fiona has done. And putting those together, I think, is an extraordinarily valuable contribution to make. Thank you, Fiona. Thanks, Rialto. Pleasure to be here.